Time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger, editor and publisher of the Timber Jay. It's a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Well, a week has flown by and lots of news from northeastern Minnesota. Marshall, thanks for being here.
Oh, you bet. Happy to be here, Heidi.
I think we got to start with PolyMet. A number of stories you covered in this week about the proposed copper nickel mine near Hoyt Lakes. Some news came in after the paper was put to bed this week, and you've been covering other stories on PolyMet. Fill us in.
Yeah. Well, actually, it was fairly significant news, and it broke late Wednesday after, like you said, we had already put the paper to bed. We did post a story on our website, so people can read it there before it comes out in print next week. But basically, the Court of Appeals has issued a stay, and this is the Minnesota Court of Appeals, has issued a stay on two primary permits for the PolyMet project. And by stay, that means they've suspended the permits until further court proceedings. And I'm talking about the permit to mine, which is the most key of the permits. That was issued by the Department of Natural Resources, as well as a dam safety permit, and that's for their tailings dams. And the decision is obviously quite significant, and it suggests that the Court of Appeals has not been particularly impressed with, you know, some of the case that the DNR has been making here regarding these permits. They said some of the questions that have been raised by the plaintiffs, you know, who are challenging these permits, including a number of environmental groups as well as the Fond du Lac Band, they're saying that they're raising some legitimate issues that should be explored, and they've put a stay on those permits until October 24th, when they're requiring that the DNR and all the parties provide legal arguments to the Court of Appeals on why the stay should not be imposed for a longer period, while the court then undergoes a review of all these various issues that have been raised. So this is obviously a significant blow to PolyMet, you know, a victory for some of these environmental opponents of this. And it comes at the same time that the Office of Inspector General for the Environmental Protection Agency has announced that they're expanding their own federal investigation into whether the EPA has been, under the Trump administration, has been negligent or actually working to block required reviews of some major permits. And this expanded federal probe was sparked by their investigation so far into the allegations that the MPCA and the EPA had sort of coordinated their efforts to try to suppress comments by EPA professional staff who had been concerned that the PolyMet water discharge permit was not compliant with the Clean Water Act. And those concerns had been revealed through some whistleblowers, and the Inspector General had started investigating that back earlier this year. And they have since met with EPA staff in the regional office, the Great Lakes Regional Office, and they also have met with a number of other parties which were involved in that permitting process. And from what they've learned from that, they've decided that apparently that there's a fairly serious issue here, that they're now going to see whether or not this is a pattern that's been occurring elsewhere in the country. So, you know, number one, this suggests that their findings were concerning, obviously, to the Inspector General. Otherwise, presumably, they would have, you know, ended their investigation. It also means that their investigation is likely to take substantially longer, which could mean that, you know, that's going to delay any final resolution or findings that they might issue. So, you know, I suspect that when you look at the combination of these various court rulings that have come out in recent weeks, as well as now the expanded federal investigation, I think there's going to be a very substantial delay for PolyMet, and clearly this has become a serious problem. I know a number of supporters of the project had, you know, been complaining that, oh, these were just last-minute desperate efforts to throw sand in the gears. That's been a common talking point. And I suspect at this point they might want to revise those talking points, because it appears that there are some significant issues here, as people, whether it's government watchdogs or the courts, start to delve into these issues, they are clearly pointing to things that they find very concerning.
Marshall, let's move on to another story that has to do with forest disturbance. You know, everywhere we turn, we're seeing we're not just hearing about climate change, we're actually starting to see it show up. And tell us about this study and what it shows.
Yeah, this actually is a study that just came out. It was just published in the Annals of Forest Science by a group of University of Minnesota researchers. And they basically used inventory data, forest inventory data, which is updated every 5 years. And they took a look over the last 20 years. And one thing that's happened with forest inventory data in recent years, over the past 20 years, is they started going back to the same plots year after year. And so as changes would occur in those plots, they were able to document, you know, the changes in all these plots. So by looking at the data that's been developed through these forest inventories, these researchers were able to get a much better sense of exactly what kind of changes are happening to Minnesota forests. And their theory was that, you know, we're seeing an increase in disturbance to forests in northern Minnesota because, you know, we're seeing changes due to climate change in many cases. We're seeing, you know, more drought. We're seeing more severe storms, more insect pest disease, things like that. And it turns out they found that the numbers, the data anyway, that they assembled showed that the change has been far more dramatic, I think, than they even anticipated. In fact, you know, just to give you an idea, while the average forest plot that they examined, say, 20 years ago, might have seen disturbance on average every 20 years, they're saying now they're seeing disturbance on these sites as frequently as every 8 years. In fact, that was the norm now, is they were seeing disturbance every 8 years versus an average of about 20 years in the past. So that's obviously a very dramatic increase in the rate of disturbance. And, you know, the impact there is, well, you know, what does this do to older forests? You know, if trees are being killed and forest stands are being disturbed significantly significantly altering way, much more frequently, that means that trees are not going to get older, and you're probably going to see a change in the types of trees that are going to be growing there, because obviously some trees are more resilient, whether it's to wind or drought or insects, than others. So, and one of the big changes, of course, could be just, you know, if you start losing your older forests, your larger trees, that's going to impact a lot of species here that, say, rely on tree cavities for nesting, you know, larger woodpeckers, a number of ducks, things like fisher and pine marten. All of these types of animals and birds could start to see, decline because of these changes in the forest. And it could also affect, you know, the timber industry. I mean, you know, obviously they can use smaller diameter trees for a lot of products. Some of the trees, though, that might be benefiting or at least become more dominant in the forest might not be the types of species that are good for, you know, whatever you're trying to make, whether it's paper or oriented strand board, whatever you're looking for. So, I mean, clearly this is going to have an impact, and I suspect it's going to be something that, you know, the DNR is going to have to start looking at in terms of considering, you know, how to manage the forest as we move forward here.
Mm-hmm. So you said the disturbance is not just forestry like it had been in the past, or clear cutting or doing things like that. It has to do
Correct.
With what's happening.
In fact, they did not consider timber harvest, because that they said that's a planned treatment. They were looking at naturally occurring disturbance. But of course, you know, natural is sort of, you have to almost put that in quotes these days, because they believe, you know, the study concluded that, you know, climate change is a primary factor here. You know, that's what's increasing the rate of wildfire and severe storms, and, you know, allowing invasive, insect pests that maybe didn't survive here in the past to spread further north. So, you know, they really see that as the gas pedal here that is really driving the rate of forest disturbance. You know, and a really good example, I mean, think about this. You know, the Boundary Waters Canoe Area is about 1.1 million acres. And 20 years ago, it was almost all old forest. Today, most of it is young forest because of the extent of disturbance that they've seen. You know, we had the big blowdown. We've had multiple significant blowdowns. The biggest was in 1999, of course, but we've had a number of quite substantial blowdowns since from various derechos that have come through. You know, and those have affected probably 400,000 acres of the Boundary Waters, just wind damage. And then you've had multiple catastrophic fires. You had Ham Lake, Cavity Lake, and then, of course, the biggest of all, the Pagami Creek fire. That burned almost 100,000 acres by itself. And these other two were, you know, at 50, 60,000 acres. So, you know, you're seeing a huge amount of disturbance, you know, on an area like that that really has no other impact from humans, where you've got this huge area of forest, and you know, now it's being, more than half of it is being leveled either by wind or fire. That's very significant in terms of, you know, how that's going to affect the future of that forest. And if this trend continues, the idea of having the old forest, big trees, like, you know, we've always associated with our area, that may just be a thing of the past.
Before we go, let's talk about Ely Big Weekend. The Ely Marathon's going on. We've got some we're rooting for, right?
Well, actually, my wife Jody is going to do the half marathon.
Okay.
This is the first time she has participated in a marathon, so she's very excited about that. She's been doing quite a bit of running lately, though, so I think she's up for it. It's become a big deal. You know, this is a Boston Marathon qualifying race, and, you know, it's really starting to attract some big numbers and some big-name racers. And then, of course, you know, they have to have their little Ely twist on it, which is the canoe marathon as well, you know, where you run the marathon with a canoe on your back. Just running a marathon isn't a big enough challenge. So they have about 30 participants who are going to be doing the marathon with a canoe.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Don't sign me up for that one.
All right. The Ely Marathon going on this weekend. You can read more and see photos at timberjay.com. That's Marshall Helmberger, editor and publisher of the Timberjay. Marshall, thanks so much. We'll check in next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Heidi.